Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. I'm Joe at RTE.ie. Caroline, good afternoon, Caroline.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Good. I know you're at your wit's end. It's your nephew who's he's in that outpost, which is on in a lot of the newspapers today. He's in Lebanon. There's Camp Shamrock. And then I think about an hour away is this outpost where there are 30 of our soldiers. They're effectively trapped and surrounded.
100%, yeah. Yeah. And it's very, very upsetting, so it is. There's 30, which my nephew would be number 29, say.
Okay.
They can't get out. They're constantly in and out of bunkers. When they do get out of bunkers, we do get a little message saying we're okay. Okay. Don't be worrying about us. The internet is brutal, absolutely brutal. But we're begging the UN, we're begging the Irish government, please do whatever you can, get them out of that outpost.
Because they're surrounded by the Israeli Defence Forces, which means they're a target.
We're seeing it all on Sky News. We're seeing it on RT One News. We're seeing it. They don't know that we're seeing it and how strong they are for us. Telling us not to be worrying. God love them. We're seeing it and we're like, get them out. Why can't us not just go in and get them out? Now, look, we're not stupid. We understand it's dangerous to move them. But it's very upsetting for us as a family.
Yeah.
Watching them and seeing them struggling, telling us not to be worrying when we are worrying. We're not sleeping, we're not eating right. We're just constantly overloaded now with the nurse constantly telling us they are trapped, we need to get them out.
And I don't know whether you saw it, if it was primarily on the front of the Star, that of the Israeli tank, and when you talk tanks, you're talking behemoths, massive, massive tank right beside the Irish outpost.
Yeah.
Right beside.
Yeah.
Explain the blue tick to me, Caroline. Okay, we're used to calling them the blue helmets. The blue tick, you live for that little blue tick on the WhatsApp.
Right. So I'm in a little group.
Yeah.
And in this little group, it's all positive and but just letting each other know, they're online. So I'll even throw up a stupid little message, you know, just to see if he's seen that message.
Great.
Is he okay? Has he seen that message?
Okay.
Like, it's very, very upsetting.
Yeah.
Then you have, I'm going to say this out straight to you, a mobile company.
Yeah.
My nephew was sending a call to us to let us know that he's okay. Four-minute call.
Yeah.
It's costing €18. For that 4 minute call, like that is absolutely horrendous. For them to get in contact with us to let us know that they're all right, and that's cost them a fortune.
And I'll stick with that just for a sec. I know it's, but is it an Irish based mobile phone company there I'll work on?
Air Mobile. So now he's not on Air Mobile. Yeah, now he's not on that now. He came off it. But it is Air Mobile that cost that amount of money yet. Yeah, his bill now is that's coming in and it's 170 something euros, and that was only for a 4 minute call.
Wow.
Now that's shocking. So I hope the government now is going to help pay for that phone bill.
Or even if the phone companies could make a gesture.
You saw President Higgins said
at the weekend that it's outrageous that Israel has threatened UN peacekeepers in the Lebanon. Now, I don't know what difference that will make, but the Israelis are in no doubt of the attitude of the Irish state.
It's intimidation. To me, that's intimidating them. Like, there's 30 of them in that little camp. 30 of them. And then you have that big, huge tank looking in at them. That's intimidation.
But the tank becomes, the tank becomes a target.
Yeah. And it's frightening.
And
then we have air kids telling us, we're all right, don't be worrying about us. They don't think that we know what we're seeing. Do you know what I mean? We're actually seeing this on Sky News. We're hearing it from RTE1. They don't know that we're seeing this.
And how's your sister, his mother?
Oh, she's on the verge of a nervous breakdown. No, I have to be telling you, she's on the verge of a breakdown. She's wood sick. Really, now I have to say, I don't know how she get through the day. She has younger kids. And do you know what? There's no counselling for them younger kids. There's counselling for the likes of myself. There's counselling for my sister or husband or older bias. But there's no counselling for the younger kids, which is absolutely shocking.
And when you hear, well, the Army have another statement now, say all our personnel are all accounted for and well.
It's the same email.
They're grand. They're grand. In other words, everything is grand.
It's grand. Yeah, it's the same email every day. Now, I have to be honest with you, only that we're seeing this on Sky News. Where, you know, I mean, you can tell the Irish government is getting worried now. You can actually tell. You can see it in them. They're actually getting worried now for age groups. They need to be brought home. They were brought over there to work as peacekeepers. Yeah. They're not able to do that job. So send them home.
And I know Orla Gear. Well, Fran McNulty, your own Fran McNulty, is doing brilliant work. And Orla Gear from the BBC, I know, has been there a long time. I don't even think a journalist can get down to that part of the...
You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. It's too bad. Sure, we're seeing it. You can see yourself. You're told on Sky News. You can see the missiles going straight over. It's very, very frightening.
And Caroline, you're obviously very close to your nephew.
My nephew and me have a close bond. I don't want to start crying on the radio.
No, no, you can't.
But I have to say, he's an absolute rock. Yeah. And I mean that a rock, like how strong he is coming on and telling us, don't be worrying about me on grand, we're all fresh here. Like, it's not grand where he is. We're looking at it. We can see they're actually trapped. We're seeing this with our own eyes and they don't know that we're seeing this.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And you're obviously, as you say, you can hear it in your voice. You're very, very close to him. But when would he say things to you and your sister, Carol, and his mum? Mum, I joined the army. I am in the army.
We're built for this. We trained for this. We're okay. But they're not okay. That's trapped. They're the 30 that's trapped in that outpost.
The 30 of them, yeah.
And I have to say, they're a good bunch of lads that sound there. They're heroes.
Great.
They're brave. They're getting on to us. We're okay. Don't be worrying. I mean, Jesus, I've never seen a bunch of young people so strong to come on and tell us that they're okay when we're seeing this. And we're like, how are they okay? They're going up and down to bunkers. We're living for this little tick to say, yeah, they're grand. They're in there. They're grand. They're getting out. Yeah. It's frightening.
And how far are they from Camp Shamrock? I think
it's about an hour and a half. I'm not too sure.
So that's an impossible journey. And that's just
it is.
That's a death trap now, that whole distance.
It would be, because you wouldn't know if they moved them.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't even want to think about it. Like, you know, I just don't know how they're going to get them out, but they need to be brought out. They need, you know, the UN needs to do something. The Irish government needs to do something. I've tagged Simon Harris. I tagged Micheál Martin.
Okay.
I tagged Mary Lou MacDonald.
Yeah.
I tagged everybody and not one person is saying anything. They're all keeping shut and not saying, oh, walking on it. Nobody's doing nothing for them.
The Defence Force, just another statement from the Defence Force. Defence Force would like to acknowledge and thank the families of our soldiers currently deployed in Lebanon.
Yeah.
Sheltering in place is still the safest option at this point in time. The Defence Forces is aware of misinformation and imagery circulating. They don't tell us what the misinformation is and what's the misimagery.
So is Sky News lying that the tank is not outside our building, outside the camp? So who's lying that the camp, if you look, you'll see the tank outside their camp. So who's lying? There's a photograph of it.
Yeah, but we know, like Tom, any of the experts, Tom Clone and Declan Parrott, they're all saying it is a war zone.
Yeah.
It is a war
zone. They're not over there for a war, over there for peace.
Exactly. And war zones are chaotic, they're mayhem, they're unpredictable.
Yeah. I think they're waiting for something. One of them gets hurt. I don't even want to think of the outcome. But one of them gets hurt or worse, it's going to fall on the Irish government. I blame the Irish government because they should have pulled ranks. They should have gotten them out straight away when all that kicked off because they're not able to do their job. They were sent over there to do peace work, but they can't do peace work because it's a war.
And it's an out-of-control war. It's a war now.
Really out-of-control,
well, it's a war now involving seven countries.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you think of all the forces at work out there, and then it's a war that's supplied by
20
countries.
And the Irish army is great.
I hear you.
They are brilliant. The Irish army are brilliant because they have them young people all trained well.
Yeah, that's why. But Caroline, did you not hear in the budget that they've announced a double payment for our soldiers in December because they're great?
Is that all they're getting?
I'm sorry, I'm joking. They haven't announced any double payment. They
it
have
was the women. I know, it's the double children's allowance.
I know, right, which is great, but they should announce something for our soldiers.
For our soldiers, I have to be honest with you, they're little heroes.
Yeah.
They deserve more than what they're getting. They're treated like fucking shit. Oh, sorry for cursing.
Okay.
But they are treated badly in their country. I mean, they're the first line.
Yeah.
They're the first line men and women, and I have to say, they're heroes. They're absolute heroes, yeah.
Even if they...
I hope someone gets them home. I hope to God someone is listening here and gets them home.
Well, they might,
and I hope air starts out the mobile phones for the lads over there because that's
I just wonder what if some phone company make a gesture. There's only three... There's 370 of our soldiers there. I assume they're on different plans. But the phone company should be able to find out which of our mobile phones that we are being used at the minute and billing for, how many of them are in... The Lebanon, and given the situation, the Lebanon...
That bill should be wiped clear.
Yeah,
Government should pay. Say, look, there we go. We're sorting that out for you, lads. You just can keep contact with your family. Because at the end of the day, them lads are very good. The men and women over there, they're built like something else. They're getting on to us.
Yeah.
You just don't be worrying. We trained for this. We're grand. Don't be worrying. But it is a worry.
And what
we're
do you,
worried.
Caroline, what do you do, you and your sister and your extended family?
When he rings, when he texts, we try to stay calm and we don't let him know that we know all this, and I hope to God he doesn't hear this radio show.
No, he won't.
But we do try to stay calm now, you know, we're like, oh yeah, no, I know, yeah, you're doing brilliant, yeah, and, you know, it's sad, it is sad.
Mm-hmm.
But he keeps telling us, don't be worrying, my grant. You know what I mean? Like, how many times can you say your grant?
And you say, there is a prayer that you're all saying.
Oh, don't even go there. I'm praying like mad I am. And I'm not even a holy person, God forgive me. I'm praying like mad. There is a holy prayer for the soldiers serving over the left.
And for people who are religious, please, this is the prayer. I didn't know.
For all prayers, yeah.
Please pray. Yeah. Please pray, our Lord. Please pray for our Irish peacekeepers, especially those in UNIFIL mission in South Lebanon, and for their families. Convince us once again, Lord, that your light cannot be put out, so that we may go without fear where there is love, joy and hope. We pity the mercy are not forgotten and where men and women have stopped loving each other. I understand that line. I'm reading it wrong, but I know what it means. May we never have to use our weapons in anger. May make us a blessing to all the ill and the dying, the weary, depressed, and help us in our hunger and thirst, and help those who are hungering and thirsty at this time. It's but you do say prayers among yourselves.
I pray and I constantly up and down to the church. I'm walking up and down to the church all the time. Lighting candles. Yeah. And I'm not a holy person, as I said, but I am praying like mad for my nephew and like all them lads and girls. Praying like mad for them.
Okay.
They're heroes. I'm going to keep saying it. They are heroes.
You're obviously a very, very close family. He's trapped. I mean, again, 31 helicopter can take... A Chinook helicopter can take up to 30 people, Caroline, I hope, to, above all, I hope other relatives of our great men and women out there can hear the solidarity and the care and the compassion and indeed the anger in your voice. And fingers crossed, I know you pray, Caroline, so please God, everything will work out well. Caroline, thanks indeed. And if he was listening, he said he might listen. Why would you speak to him directly?
I hope
there?
He's not listening. Say
it to him. He might hear it later on. When he comes home, please God. And on Christmas morning, he's going to be sitting down, and he's going to say to you, Caroline, did that fool on Liveline ask you to talk to me directly. What did you say to me directly, Caroline?
Oh, he knows what I'd say. I love the bones of you, and just get home safe. Okay. And mind each other. Mind each other. Just always mind each other. And there's a mental health as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, hopefully you can hear that very soon under different circumstances.
Oh, we'll get them home. I know we will. I will be. We're going to get them home safe.
Okay, Caroline. You're a hero, and your sister's a heroine as well. Okay, Caroline, thanks indeed. Mind yourself. Do you hear me? Mind yourself.
Thanks, Joe.
Please mind
Thank
yourself.
You. Yeah.
Thank you. Joe at rt.ie. 51551 is the text number. 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
It's a blanket ban. I think it's after surprising a lot of people. It came in today. It applies to Dublin Bus, Bus Éireann, Go Ahead Ireland, the private operator, Éireann Road Éireann, Lewis and TFI Local Link. In other words, everything that's controlled by the National Transport Authority, and they've banned e-scooters. Now, mobility scooters, obviously, they're not banned. There'll be mayhem, uproar. E-bikes are not banned, which are bigger than e-scooters, by the way, much bigger than e-scooters. And we've been receiving calls. Now, by the way, a lot of the people affected by this e-scooter ban that's come out of the blue on Dublin Bus, Bus Éireann, Go Ahead Ireland, everywhere, any public transport, are people who are flying around these cities all day caring for other... They work for these agencies, and they're to get from A to B, and they find the e-scooter... One, environmentally friendly, and two, very, very helpful in because we have a limited public transport system, whether people like it or not. We don't have an underground. We've two Lewis lines, and one Dart line. Eamon Milan. Eamon, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
What do you think of this ban?
Well, this morning when I heard that you were going to discuss it, I was just sending off a text to say, fair play, this needs to be discussed. But I've been listening. I've been listening to that lady speaking about the circumstances of the military in the Middle East, and I'm thinking that in the context of the Middle East, this is very much a first world problem.
Of course.
But I think, like you just said, I think it's crazy. I mean, the people who use e-scooters are people who are less well off.
Yeah.
Largely speaking, they're less well off. Yeah. They're students who can't get accommodation in Dublin. They're people who use public transport to get to town doing what the government has told them. Park and ride or use public transport, and they still have a bit of a way to go when they get to town, and they use an e-scooter to do that, and blocking them from bringing their e-scooters onto public transport seems to me to be using a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
They said even if your e-scooter can be folded or carried, there'll be some kind of a strap. They're banned as well.
Every single person who... this is the one thing I can say with certainty about...
The one thing we say with certainty is the mobile phone line will go. Is it gone? It's gone for the time being. The National Transport Authority say... when you say, what is the evidence? By the way, as one caller said this morning, I have an e-scooter and I fold it up and bring it onto my electric bus. Now, is the electric bus in danger of going on fire more or less, more so than the e-scooter? I doubt it. And anyway, he also says most buses have two doors now, have emergency exits, if I have an e-scooter, I stand near the front if there's space and where the buggies do be. So I'm near the door, if God forbid anything has ever happened. There's no evidence in Ireland, but the NTA throw in this line at the end, and there's no footnote, there's no reference. I can't go and find out what they're based on. Similar restrictions are already in place in Berlin, Barcelona and the UK. That's what they say. Berlin, incredible train and underground system. Barcelona, incredible train and underground system. I don't know where they talk. Is it a blanket ban in the UK on public transport? We know, for example, a number of the cities in the UK have underground system, primarily London, which is just absolutely incredible. And they say, even though e-scooters are now regulated, we're told, the guidance is prompted by safety concerns. Yeah, but I heard an e-scooter... a salesperson who runs, and the people would know because people would be bringing back. He said he's had no problems with these scooters going on fire. And the batteries are known to this is the NTA. This is just a bald statement. These batteries are known. The NTA are now suddenly the world's expert on e-scooters. These batteries are known to develop internal faults leading to overheating and combustion. Mobile phones. If you look at the Dublin Fire Brigade Twitter feed, which is incredible, mobile phones have lithium batteries. They can develop internal faults. Anything can. Your charger, your juicer, your power bank or whatever can be. Everything where there's power going into it at some stage has to be treated with care. But anyway, Eamon is gone. Is it the mobile phone is gone? Oh, you're back, Eamon. Good man. Sorry.
I was about to say that the one common denominator between every user of public transport today is that they're going to have a lithium battery in their pocket, and if you're travelling on an aircraft, they manage the risk. They tell you if your phone shows signs of overheating, turn it off straight away, bring it to the attention of the staff, and they can't pull in on the side of the road if you're on an aircraft. They say if it gets caught between the seats.
Call a member of staff, let's deal with this.
But what the difficulty that I have with it is that the people who use it, generally speaking, tend to be less well off. In many occasions, they seem to be occasions for antisocial behaviour, and this might be at the root of what's going on here with the National Transport Authority, but they can't very well come out and say it.
I agree with you, but if it is antisocial behaviour, and it is youngfellas flying up and down the footpath and coming up behind you and zipping in between the bollards or whatever, that's an issue for the Gardaí. That's nothing to do. They're not saying, the NTA aren't saying the fellas are flying up and down the lower deck of the 78 bus, it's gone now, the 79 bus, on their e-scooters doing wheelies. They're not. They're saying they're banning because they can.
But any user of public transport will say that they have occasional fears or concerns about using public transport. Yeah. In fact, I saw today that there are now security officers on Dublin bus. But people will say that they have fears. But I would say their fears of the battery on an e-scooter going on fire is way, way down the list. But it's the first one to be addressed. And the impact on people who can't afford cars or who perhaps have decided not to use their cars in favour of an electric vehicle, they're the ones who are being hit by this.
And I'm thinking of the backbone, these people, by the way, who the NTA would say, we had widespread consultation. Do they not realise that a significant number of people who are carers do magnificent work, doing 5, 6, 7 calls a day to different households, that a lot of them are not native-born English speakers, for a start. I'd say a lot of them were surprised with this ban today. A lot of them, I just wonder who's going to enforce it or whatever. But
I don't think it's going to survive. Personally, I think there'll be probably a government intervention because it doesn't make sense. Now, the public transport system isn't run for the convenience of its employees. Their concerns with respect to safety should be listened to, and any real risks they identify should be managed. But I think you said it at the early part of this programme. They appear now to be the experts. They appear to be producing scientific facts that aren't generally well known.
Yeah, well, I'll finish on this. I'm overdoing it at this stage.
Sorry.
I thought the NTA are on a power trip. I'm on a power trip. The quality control of their construction, these e-scooters, is therefore, wait for this beautiful use of words, is therefore not as mature as e-bikes and mobility scooters. The quality control of their construction.
It's like something I come up with myself.
By the way, Eamon, the government will do nothing. Simon, their Taoiseach says the cap on passengers in Dublin Airport is absolutely ludicrous. Well then, light a fire under somebody in Fingal and say, will you make a decision and lift the cap? But
it's 2 hours to Shannon, Joe, and 15 minutes to get past security.
Yeah.
Sorry, 5 minutes to get past security.
Okay.
Well, come to Shannon.
Yeah, okay. Eamon Goodamina Margaret, Eamon Milan, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Larry Carty's in Galway. Larry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Are you up to speed on where these 30 Irish soldiers are trapped at the minute in Lebanon?
Yeah, they're in a place called Marun Al Ras.
Okay.
It's an observation post just inside the Lebanese border with Israel.
Okay.
Now, I know that the Israelis advanced on the post on Friday, and they camped outside it. Now, there's mixed reports on how many tanks were there, but let's just say there was at least six.
Okay, wow.
Now, reports that I'm hearing today is that they have now moved on and moved northwards.
Okay.
So I'm sure they've left a rear guard in position near the post.
Yeah. And,
I'd just like to reassure people, and I heard Caroline there earlier on, okay, it's a worrying time for all.
Yeah.
But this has happened before to us. I was cut off and stuck there for 3 weeks extra. And, you know, we get through it. You know, we're trained. The lads are very well trained.
Of course. And Larry, hang on, what's in that outpost? Have you been in that outpost?
I haven't been in that outpost, no, but all UN outposts are very similar. They'll have the observation tower, accommodation block, cookhouse, and they'll also have their bunker. Now, the bunkers are a lot different to when I was in the army.
Okay.
In that our bunkers were overground with reinforcements on top. These bunkers are actually underground.
Course,
and they have toilet facilities in them, which we didn't have.
Okay, you didn't have toilet facilities in the bunker?
We didn't have toilet facilities in our bunkers, no. You know, there was no toilet facilities. You know, you took a chance. You took, in a lull in the fighting, you went out.
And okay, wow. But you say they're better now. But how long, how many days or weeks rations would you have?
Well, they should have up to 21 days, 3 weeks rations on post.
Okay.
Now, I was talking to one of the guys.
By the way, Larry, what are those rations? What do I get? What are our boys and women eating?
They're getting a breakfast, a dinner, and a tea in the ration pack.
Yeah, but what is it?
Calories.
Okay, what is it? Anyway, tasty.
You get salt and pepper to season it, as they say. You know, but you'd have a breakfast. You might have sausages and beans. You'd have your main meal, which would be a stew or a stroganoff or something like that. And then you'd have your tea. You'd also get the tea-making facilities, you know, tea bags, coffee,
and
sugar.
What is the cooking? Is it a gas cooker? Or?
It's a hexamine cooker, small little cooker with a tablet that would heat up everything. But in 1996, and Tom Cronin, I think, might have spoke to you about 96, I was there as well. And fair play to our chefs. They took all our ration packs.
Brilliant.
And cooked it for us. Okay. And they were putting up meals that were unbelievable out of a ration pack.
Well, because imagine, Larry, if you're trapped and are stuck in a bunker and outpost, one of the few, very, very few things you might have to look forward to is a decent meal and a decent cup of tea and a decent bit of hot food.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And that's why the Army chefs are very well trained and they stepped up to the mark in 96.
Brilliant.
Now, we were well fed.
Defence Forces say that I presume they're talking about Camp Shamrock and the outpost. About how far away do you know is that outpost time?
It's only about 7 kilometres. No more than 20 to 30 minutes of travel time, depending on what condition the roads are in.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, isn't it?
You know, so
the Defence Forces say that they have, I presume they're referring to Camp Shamrock, I said, and the outpost, they have enough supplies of food and water.
They have. We always had extra water in the bunkers, separate to the water supply we would have had.
And Larry, looking at it, I know we're at a distance and it is difficult to, but is this not the most dangerous scenario, Irish troops? And I know, it can change day to day and there could be, is this not the most dangerous prolonged scenario the Irish troops have ever been in?
I think that 2006, when the Israelis came in 2006, that was a 34-day operation.
When they invaded Lebanon before.
Yeah. And Grapes of Wrath was nearly a three-week operation, which I was involved in.
That was what, 19... that's back to 96.
That 96, yeah. And then you had...
And again, that was the idea. Coming in to get Hezbollah again.
Yeah. And just going back, and they also came in 1982 and went all the way to Beirut.
Yeah.
And then they withdrew down behind the lines of the Tani River, and they set up this UN buffer zone.
Okay.
Now, we had posts in the buffer zone that were inside the Israeli-controlled area, namely 628 Alpha and 621. I served on both. And we could be 2 weeks on the post, cut off from the outside world.
Yeah.
But we had enough rations.
And, Larry, does it... Now, Caroline said that 30 soldiers that are there, they're getting on well together. I presume that's important, is it?
There is a huge bond. You've got to remember, these 33 are part of a platoon.
Okay.
They would have trained together prior to deployment.
Brilliant.
They'd know each other very, very well. There's a massive bond, and this is a bond that's unbreakable, even when they come home.
And how?
You know, the bond is always going to be there.
And how, Larry, again, forgive the triviality of some of my questions. How would they pass the time? Apart from, obviously, they're observing, but how would they pass the time? If you don't have electricity, you don't have Wi-Fi, you don't have...
Well, they have electricity, Joe, because they'd be operating generators
okay.
to power up the post.
Okay.
But the post must be lit up at night for both sides to see where exactly the UN post is.
Good point, yeah. So how would how do you pass the day with your 29 mates?
Well, Monopoly was brilliant, as was a deck of cards.
A deck of cards, yeah. You play Monopoly.
We'd play Monopoly. You'd have a load of games on the post.
Great.
Dart boards, everything. All the games would be there. But you got to remember, them 33 are not all in the bunker at the same time.
At one time, I understand that, yeah.
They're rotating out to observe. And that's why I'm a firm believer in that they're safer where they are now.
Okay.
Rather than going on the road and moving.
Here, yeah.
And be out in the wide open. I know they've got the armoured cars, but they're definitely safer where they are.
And Larry, what is the command? Forgive me again. What is the command structure in that bunker with 30 soldiers? Who do I have there? A captain or commandant? What do I have?
They'd have an officer, either a captain or a lieutenant.
Okay.
They'd have their platoon sergeant.
All right.
And then they'd have seven NCOs, seven corporals as well on post.
And
so there is a leadership structure on the post.
And that's rigid. That stays in place, which is great.
That stays in place. And most of these guys in the senior management on the post are experienced and have served in the area before.
Okay. Stay with us, Larry. It's very worrying, but it's also... you're very enlightening, and especially in the correct... worry and emotion that Caroline conveyed. Philip MacDonald. Philip, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Again, the same question, Philip. I know you served, and thank you and Larry for your service, but I know you served. Is this the most worrying, prolonged situation the Irish peacekeepers have been in Lebanon?
I don't think so. Larry said he was underground for 2 or 3 weeks. This has only been on now, I think, probably a week or so.
Okay.
Look, I'm not 100% sure in all the background of it, but of course it's a worrying time. It's a worrying time for families at home, and I totally understand your callers coming on there and expressing their concerns and getting the soldiers home and all that. And I do want to sound repetitive in relation to other callers, but these lads are trained. They know exactly what to do, so on like that. So, I mean, as Larry said, they're safer actually in the bunkers than they were if they were out mobile on the roads with landmines, etc., etc.
And, I know the IDF have killed Irish soldiers before, as have Hezbollah, whatever, but do they respect the UN flag?
Do you know something, Joe? That's something I could have been thinking about for the last 40 years since I served there. I don't think so, Joe. Now, I could be correct on this in a sense. When it comes to war, or it comes to their so-called war, I don't think they do respect it in the sense for their own protection. Maybe in peacetime and that, and I know we do have an envoy here in Ireland, an Israeli envoy in Ireland and all that kind of stuff, but I don't think when it comes to their war and them driving forward north into Lebanon, I don't think it they don't have that much respect for it. I don't think so now.
So the president was correct at the weekend to say it was outrageous what the Israeli state were doing.
Well, I mean, what he said was probably was more correct was that it was outrageous that they were camping beside the UN,
yeah.
And that some people were perceiving that they were using the UN as a protection and cover. And then on the downside of that, then is if the Hezbollah or any other faction returned fire, that the Irish lads could be in the line of firing. Which is
if you presume the other side to be Hezbollah, even though they're not a state army as such, though they are in the government in Lebanon at the minute. But the other side are not behind it, or pardon the pun, about using UN forces as shields either. It's a well-known tactic of war, isn't it?
That's true, Joe. I mean, when I was there in 1982, the 2nd of June 1982, I'm sure there's a lot of ex-soldiers out there who remember that day. That was the day that the Israelis invaded southern Lebanon again. Now, we were lucky in a sense, Joe, that we were in observation towers observing it, and we went down to the bunkers, but the Israelis moved further north through the UN zone and encamped further north, which doesn't mean, I think Larry might have alluded to it there, that they may have moved on further now. They will always send in a reconnaissance first to clear the area and so on, and then they will move further north, and they will leave some protection behind them as well, probably to stop them from being cut off from behind.
Yeah, but there have been some, as you well know, on the days that are in it, you can't do any whataboutry. You can't.
Yeah, Joe, I haven't heard your programme all over the last few days. I know it's been ongoing, and the pieces that I have heard, I haven't heard anything about the locals, the poor locals are stuck in the middle of this. I mean, over the years, the Irish and the UN have built up relationships with the locals. Now, I know Caroline was asking for the troops to be called home, but if those troops are moved out, what's going to happen to the locals? And that is on the mind.
But
have
the Israelis not sent messages to all the locals, get out? They never say where you have to go, but they just say get out.
Yes, that's true, Joe. But in some conflicts, or in many conflicts, there is people who will not leave their homes, who feel they're probably old and disabled and or young and whatever, but they will not leave their home. So I would suggest, now I can be corrected on this, I would suggest that there is families in their own cellars quite close to the UN bases, hopefully using them as protection.
Yeah.
I totally agree with
Larry. Come in, Larry, yes, please.
Yeah, I totally agree there. In 96, we had a lot of people that stayed behind because they, like, Lebanon is a poor country. They're not very wealthy. They don't have, a lot of them wouldn't have the transport to get out. So it, as was said there, it's basically the old, the elderly. And we don't want another situation like what happened in Kosovo, where the people were massacred when the Dutch pulled out. And
well, you only have to, even in the area, it's a distance, I know, but even in the area we're talking about, the Middle East, the Lebanon, we have the Sabra and Shatila massacres in 1982, 4,000 people massacred.
That was in Beirut when they moved up to Beirut.
Yeah. So it is chaos. It is war. It is unpredictable.
It is a war, and
they can justify everything. And I know people are saying the Israelis must respect the UN, but our president, doesn't believe they do. Whether we like him saying it or not.
In time of war, they will roll over anything to achieve their objective. They will keep moving on. And
can I just come in there?
Philip, yes.
Yeah, it's just, again, going back to the invasion of 1982, I mean, we were instructed to put down these tank stops, as they're called. They're big metal girders, all entwined in other, and they're supposed to catch in the tracks.
Yeah.
I mean, we put them down and we were told to withdraw to a safe distance, and we withdrew to a safe distance, but we could see the Israeli tanks coming, and they just blew them off the road. they just, you know, whether they knew there was Irish or any UN, the flag, we left the flags there on the outposts, but they just came down the hill from Tidneen. Again, that'll remonstrate with a lot of people out there. They just came down the hill from Tidneen, heading towards Sultania at Tidneen Bridge, and they just blew everything off the road and just drove past.
And we just, I mean, I start listening. Well, obviously, anyway, just it's such, war is madness, and war leads to more madness, and war leads to such inhuman and unpredictable cruelty. And obviously, the people of Israel, and indeed way beyond Israel, are remembering today what happened this day last year. And we all remember, well, I remember waking up to that news on that Saturday morning, and didn't I thought it was horrific. I don't think anyone realised the horror of what was going on that day and the horror that has been unleashed ever since. So let's hope. I am falling back at Larry and Philip. I know I shouldn't, and it doesn't. I'm falling back on Caroline's prayer. Just pray that somebody will see sense. Someone will take a leadership position, be it Joe Biden or whatever, and try and sort out this, try and end. Won't solve it because there's so many we've created in the last year, millions of years of anniversaries. So many people have died. Larry Carty and Philip. Yeah, go ahead. Who's that, Philip? You have the last word, not me.
It's just in relation, I was watching some video clips last night on some of the news channels. I mean, Beirut has been completely levelled and flattened. I was out there 2 years ago on a return trip as an observer, and the 40 years previous, I was there as well. And they had built up their city. They had, you know, they had come back from whatever. You know, the political situation hasn't changed, but they had, you know, the city had been built up. Hospitals were up. Everything was up. Now the economy was in absolute ruins. Yeah. But now, I mean, the infrastructure is just being levelled again, and it's just repeating the same thing all over again.
And Lebanon doesn't exist. Well, it's a, the way we would regard it, doesn't exist as an economy or a state at this stage, given what's happening in the world. Okay, Philip, Larry Carty and Philip McDonald, Gura Míle Maca. Thank you both. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you keeping?
Not too bad, thanks.
Okay. You've been through a lot, and again, the disbelief I met over the weekend just talking to people, and indeed reading people like Terry McGean in today's Irish Daily Star, the disbelief that people have when they realise that carers, as they get older, the carers allowance, when they hit the old age pension aid, their carers allowance was actually cut in half. And I see Terry McGean describe it as inhuman, unjust, indefensible and unforgivable. But tell people what happened in your case, Mary, when your husband passed.
Well, in my case, my husband died suddenly 2 years ago.
Okay.
He suffered a cardiac arrest. And I was put on widow's pension. And I already was on carer's allowance.
Okay.
But my carer's allowance was cut in half.
Automatically.
So I had lost my full support person, my other support person.
Yeah.
And instead of supporting me, they decided I was only a half carer, even though I'm doing all the caring on my own now.
Right. And along, by the way, I keep using the word means tested. It's the means tested carer's allowance. When did you qualify for the means tested carer's allowance?
I qualified, I'd say, about 11 years ago.
Okay. And that was after, as I say, a means test. Tell us about who you're caring for. It's your daughter.
I care for my daughter. She's 29.
Yeah.
She has an intellectual disability, and she's also got epilepsy and autism.
Yeah. And you've been caring for her for 29 years. You eventually got the means tested carer's allowance 11 years ago.
That's right, yeah.
And I know your husband died unexpectedly. Wait, did you realise, did you know? Now, it's at least of your burdens at that time, in one sense, if your husband dies so suddenly. But did you know that you're going to come at you about the carer's allowance and automatically cut it in half?
I didn't realise that because, you know, not only was I losing any financial support that I got from my husband, but then to be cut again, you know, it's impossible.
Now, the story we heard last week was people who reached retirement age, 66, 67, depending at the moment, and those before who were 65, they weren't even told automatically. The computer said no, and the computer cut their carers allowance in half. Now, you're in your early 60s, you tell us, and I presume they're saying it's because you got the widow's pension.
That's right, yeah, because you can't get two full social welfare payments.
Yeah, but what does that... where does that rule come from? Is there any humanity in that rule? They're actually saying because... By the way, the reason... Bear with me, Mary. The reason you're getting the widow's pension is because your husband died.
Absolutely.
Your husband died. And they're saying because your husband died, we're going to cut your carer's allowance. It's a modest payment. Your means-tested carer's allowance, we're going to cut it in half automatically. No appeal. You can't write to any government minister. You can't write to any TD or rep. They say it's because...
Yeah, you're just told that's just how it is.
And how is your? Well, I'm also very conscious of your daughter losing her father.
Yeah, and she was very, very, very close to him, a real daddy's girl. So, you know, it's been really difficult. Like, I had to bring her to a psychiatrist the week after to make sure that she was okay, because my whole focus has been in taking care of her and making sure that she's okay. And in fact, I'd say a lot of my grief was put aside to make sure her needs were met. You know, she just comes first all the time.
Yeah.
But I definitely miss the support. I miss it. I miss the physical support, but then that's bad enough, but then not to have the financial support as well, just to make it a bit harder, you know? It's like just kicking you when you're down.
It's cruel. There's no two ways about it. Now, the other shock that came over the last 3 days when we were talking was people discovering that people like yourself who were at their wits' end caring for your loved one, capital L, are sometimes running out to do part-time work to help pay for the outgoings in the house. Are you working outside the home, Mary?
Yeah, that's what I do. I'm working part-time as well, and in order for me to work part-time, it's the only one good thing that has worked good for me. I have carers coming in the morning to help with my daughter.
Great.
So that I can go out to work. And I had to weigh that up, like, because especially with the epilepsy, I can't leave her on her own, not for a second. You know, and especially after losing someone to cardiac arrest, there's an awful fear with me as well if anything happened to her. You know, I know it's difficult looking after her, but she is what's got me through since my husband died.
And the other thing, Mary, you mentioned that your daughter, rightly so, God, had such was the devastation, and for her to try to understand where her daddy had gone. Did you get any help?
No, there was nothing. I've only recently started counselling, and it was my GP referred me to, and that's nearly 2.5 years later, because I think I just got to the stage of feeling burnt out.
It just
doesn't get any easier. It just gets harder as it goes along.
Yeah.
I seem to have come up to one obstacle after the other.
So the communication you got from the state when your husband died was your carer's allowance is cut in half automatically.
Yeah.
Because the pension, the widow's pension, which you are entitled to because you are a widow. Widow isn't just a label. It means your partner has died.
I know.
It's gone. Finite.
Yeah. And they also put me through a review recently that was extremely stressful. You know, then they wanted to know every single payment that I used on Revolut. I did send back an email to say that how distressing I found it.
Well, don't you get a reply to that?
I didn't get a reply, but my just the carers was unchanged. I just felt like I was being accused, you know, of doing something awful.
Well, we had loads of examples last week of people, their Revolut accounts of if was one family who were buying chocolate for their daughter. And they were,
yes,
and,
they wanted to know all my details on Revolut, whatever. And I said to them, I just use my Revolut the same as anybody else uses it. You know, if you went out, which is very rare, and somebody paid for something by Revolut, or if I paid and they paid me back.
This is statement again.
You got queried on that.
Shocking.
Yeah, it's a real invasion of privacy.
Statement from the Department of Social Protection that gave us last week. The Irish social welfare system is underpinned by the general principle of one person, one payment. Don't know where the principle came from. However, there is one exception, and that is in the half-rate carer's allowance. So basically what they're saying, Mary, is you're lucky.
I know. Somebody else said that to me from social welfare, that the means test was very generous. And my point was, the carer's allowance is the only allowance that you're actually working for.
Yeah.
You are working, and it's hard, and it gets harder as you get. My heart goes out to those pensioners, but like even in my stage, I'm 61, and it's just getting harder and harder. Yeah. I just find, you know, and my daughter's needs are increasing as she gets older. You know, and there's no end. You know, a relative said to me, you know, you need more help. It's relentless, but there isn't more help out there.
And
you know, and then just to be your money to be cut is the final insult.
And also the fact, again, I have this image of there was three of you in the house. Your husband dies suddenly, a young man. Your husband dies suddenly. Now there's two of you in the house.
Yeah.
And that is much greater than the sum of all its parts. In other words, losing one third of that trio has a greater impact than one third, if you follow me. You're now on your own. You've lost your partner. Your daughter has lost her daddy, and big bond between them. There's an income coming into the house. It's just shocking. Shocking.
Yeah.
How have you managed? I mean, have you managed to get any help, to join any group? Was there any light?
No, well, I would have. My daughter goes to a social club, right. And sometimes we'd get to chat to the parents, have coffee while our... Yeah. Young adults are doing their activities, so that's quite a good support. But I just find now that especially with the parents who have older children, young adults, we're all burnt out. Everybody's getting very negative. I think years ago we had a lot of positive conversation and we thought we were going to change the world, but now it's like everybody's feeling burnt out and like the hope is gone. There's a lot, you know, people are saying, oh, it's not getting any better. Things are getting worse.
Well, it's also because, and you're still very young, and your daughter is young, but both of you are getting older. The carer and the person they're caring for is getting older, and it's only going in one direction.
Well, that's it. The care needs you did years ago, you would have done them for any child, but when you're still doing it, and your child is now an adult at 29, you know, my daughter like needs a lot of personal care. You know, she needs to be showered every morning and that sort of thing. There's a lot.
Well, I'll go back to what
I won't go into all the details, but she needs a lot with personal care.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Inhuman, unjust.
And I'm not the only one. I'm very conscious of that, that there's people even in worse situations than me. And the means test, as you said, the people that I know that have severely disabled children and the... because the husband is working and there's no carer's allowance at all.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
And I add those four words from the Daily Star today. Inhuman, unjust, indefensible and unforgivable. Mary, I can hear it in your voice, but I can also hear above all your love for your daughter. And again, condolences on the unexpected passing of your partner, your husband and your daughter's daddy. The trio are now a duo, and that is a big, big, big change. And the reaction of the state to the trio becoming a duo was to say, no, there was two of you looking after your daughter. Now there's one of you, so we're going to cut the carers down in half. Thank you very much, as they would say, Mary, not.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mary. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I just see a text there. If the National Transport Authority are really interested in transport, why don't they, with the billions that they're given by the state every year, why don't they set up rental e-scooter schemes at every bus station, railway station and major bus stops? Why don't we have an e-scooter? So you get off the bus and you rent an e-scooter and you go to your work and off you go. Maybe the National Transport Authority would have something to say about that, instead of banning everything and putting up taxi fares by 10%, despite the fact that taxi drivers don't want it because they have to pay big money now to get their meters changed. But back to much more important stuff. Peggy Doyle. Peggy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you, Joe?
How are you? Tell us your situation.
Right. I was just listening to Mary there, and oh God, it's just unbelievable what is going on.
Yeah.
I'll try and keep it as short as possible, mm-hmm. Because I now know that I'm not the only one that's in this situation. But basically, my near daughter-in-law, she's the partner of my youngest son.
Okay.
She became my husband's and my carer.
Okay.
About 8 years ago.
Right.
And it was a long process applying for it.
Lots of forms.
Lots of forms and questions and looking into basically nearly how many times you went to the toilet every day.
Yeah.
But we got it in the end, and she cared for my husband until he died, which will be 7 years ago next month.
Okay.
And then she became my carer. Then she carried on, continued being my carer from that time on. And we didn't hear anything, no correspondence. The money was paid every week, and basically we didn't hear anything until a few months ago, when she got a letter,
right,
or a phone call, I can't remember which, from social welfare to say that they were investigating her carer's allowance.
God.
So eventually somebody came down from social welfare, and like I was listening to Mary, the what she went through was unreal. It wasn't just an invasion of privacy. It was unbelievable what she had to go through, the questions that she had to answer. And I was there. I went down, and she kept saying to me, oh, you don't need to be here. We do understand that you need a full-time carer. And I said, well, this does involve me. She's caring for me.
Yeah.
You know, it does involve me. But basically what's happened is she was getting... Linda also has an autistic daughter, who she's in the process of trying to get that domiciliary allowance for her.
Yeah.
And she was on it. They get a small payment if they have children as well. Now, Linda hasn't worked. She hasn't been able to work.
But she's working as a carer, Peggy. I know what you mean. I know what
exactly,
you're saying.
Yeah,
sorry,
outside
I'm not,
the home, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not checking you there. You know I completely...
Yeah, but
she has her own charge.
Her allowance has been cut from €275 per week, and 27 of that was for her daughter, who is now 16, so she came off it automatically at 16. And she now looks after me... full-time, and I do mean full-time, for the princely sum of €100.50 per week. And I think this is absolutely diabolical how anybody in that government, I don't care if they're health ministers or whatever minister they are, teacher, tornisters, whatever, how they can stand there and say, and one TD said, people shouldn't expect the state to look after their families. They should be doing it themselves. This was a person that was on €5,000 per week, yeah, as opposed to other people that are lucky if they're on £1,000 a week. You know, this is the most annoying thing that
did
I
they
have.
Say, but Peggy, did they say why they reduced your daughter, your carer's means tested allowance payment? It's not an allowance, it's a payment for work. That they reduced it by well over 50, they reduced it by nearly 66%. They reduced it from 275 to 100.
Yes.
Why? Had you wondered?
They said it was because they were €130 over the threshold that they had set, which we had forgotten. Honestly, we had forgotten all about it, Joe, because we hadn't heard anything from them. We didn't think there was an issue with the carer's allowance.
100. And, Peggy, you sat in for this inspection or audit or whatever.
I did, yes.
How long did it go on? Now, I presume there was loads of paperwork had to be supplied, and I don't know of any other organisation that looks for all these bank statements that goes through everything, if you have a revenue.
Yeah, and they did the same. I was listening to Mary, and they wanted to know, did they have Revolut? Did they have savings? Did they have a credit? And she had to supply all this, had to supply the proof bank statements. There had to be up-to-date bank statements, credit union statements, any savings, Revolut, you know, every single thing. And I said to her repeatedly, but why are you only taking income? Do you not think that we have to pay... You know, between us, we pay the same bills as everybody else. We pay the same as you. And why is it only income and not outgoings? Oh, it because it's means tested. And that's all she kept saying.
And it's the income...
It's because it's means tested.
They take Linda's, your son's income into account as well.
Yes.
There's no, absolutely. Where else does that happen where the person going for the job is asked, what is your partner earning before we decide what to pay you?
exactly.
The job is the same. In fact, the carer's job is harder than most of the jobs I know. Maybe digging coal in the rigging is harder, but I cannot think of a harder job. But what they're saying is, when you go for the job interview, they say that the amount payable, max amount payable is 275 per week. Laughable. 275 per week. And can you tell us what your husband or your partner or your wife earns? And if depending on what they earn, we're going to reduce your wages?
Yes, that's exactly what they have said. And they're not treating it as a job. And do you know, in all of this, Joe, I know there's a lot like me. I'm not trying to make myself out to be something special. But I'm coming up 82 years of age.
Okay.
I have few very debilitating conditions.
Okay.
But my main one is macular degeneration. Okay. I'm registered blind.
My own mother, yeah.
Now, I can see a little bit.
Yeah.
But I try with all my might. I try to do as much as I can for myself.
Yes.
I want my independence. I've been independent all my life. Worked all my life, even when the children were very young, not depended on any state, either here or in England, to bring up my children.
Okay.
We had them, so we supplied them, we brought them up. And my reward at the end of it, and I think we should be able to live whatever life we've got left at the end, it should be in relative peace. We should not have to worry about
dignity,
things
yeah.
like this. Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
And
well,
also, my, you know, my carer, she has to have all my details. She knows everything about me, all my bank details,
okay.
because I'm not able to do it myself because of my sight.
And is does Linda, do you need Linda an awful lot for your situation? I don't want you tell me what your situation is, but do you need Linda? Linda's care of caring for you is pretty intense,
yes.
I suspect.
It is. It's 24/7,
okay.
no matter what way you look at it, because, you know, if I'm feeling unwell or if I've spilt something, you know,
yeah.
here, or I'm not sure about some new medication that I've got, taking
yeah.
me to daycare,
okay.
taking me to my hospital appointment.
And do you live in the house with them?
No, I don't. I live in a mobile in the back garden, but the house is only yards away from me.
Oh, okay. And you like your little mobile? You like it,
do
you?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
I like my independence,
yeah, okay.
Joe. You know,
okay.
whatever little independence I've got left, I want to keep.
Okay.
And it makes me feel very, very angry and more upset than anything else.
Okay.
That now, Linda's, I mean, she's supplying me with the same care.
Okay. Well, Peggy, can I just finish on this quote? Now, we have a new Prime Minister, as you know, a new Taoiseach, and every photograph you see every day, he seems to be growing into the part, and he's non-stop. But I'm just going, an interview he gave yesterday in the Sunday Business Post, and he said every other EU Prime Minister would envy the money we have. So, I rest my case,
yeah,
Peggy. Peggy, I'm
the question,
yes.
Who's got the money?
Okay. Peggy, I just have this image of you sitting there when the social welfare, and they're good people, they are, they're doing their job. The social welfare, I think you referred to her as a woman, was sitting there going through Linda's Revolut account. Good God.
Yes.
Good God. There's a play in that, isn't there? I don't know where it's a farce, a comedy or a tragedy, Peggy. But it's very hurtful for Linda, your carer, to be dropped from 275 to 100.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if they want us to say, I mean, I'm on a widow's pension as well. If somebody becomes a carer for a family member, which is we all know this, it's saving the state thousands.
Yeah.
I don't want to go into a nursing home.
Yeah.
I want to be here at home until my last days.
Okay.
And, you know, if they want, if they say, right, if it's a pensioner, then you've got to pay some of your pension towards, you know, your carer's allowance. That's fine. Or do what they do in the UK. They actually give the payment to the person that's got the disability. In other words, my sister gets it paid to her.
Okay.
And she pays her carer.
Okay. Well, Peggy, Linda is brilliant. Your family are brilliant. You're brilliant. And many, many, many more years of shared living with your family. And as you say, the choice, I know there are good nursing homes out there, and a lot of people have no choice, but they end up and they need the care of a nursing home. But what you say, apart from that bizarre scene of your Linda being treated, not deliberately, of course. The questions are preset. But do you think you remember?
Yeah.
Peggy, you're not operating a drugs cartel, are you, from that mobile home in the back garden?
I tell you what, Joe, I wish I was.
You don't.
I wish I was. But, you know, this, I know some TDs have been, and I think, you know, everybody's got to push more and more for this.
Yeah, yeah.
For this payment not to be means tested. Like you say, it's a job.
And even begin,
it's,
even
it's not
be,
a,
yeah.
a charity, it's a job.
Okay. Peggy, stay well. Peggy, what do you do when the rain is sheeting down stair rods on the roof of your mobile home? You're not going to fright.
I turn the telly up as loud as I can, or Alexa as loud as I can.
Good, I have Alexa. Brilliant. Okay, yes. Peggy. God bless you, Peggy. and your family.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for listening, because, do you know, I feel that I'm one of the forgotten generation.
Well, you're not.
And it's just great to have somebody to listen to this to have heard my voice then.
Yeah, and what a voice. And long may it echo. That's Peggy Doyle. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. Broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin. Rachel Graham produced. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cozy colours. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.